Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade, here each weekday morning with the information you need before you get to work. And on the weekends, we put aside a special hour to go in-depth on issues and stories important to Metro Atlanta. A lot of reaction to President Biden's proposal to forgive a chunk of student loan debt last week. Reactions range from, it's not enough, it's an insult to those who've already paid, it doesn't solve the larger problem of spiraling college costs. What does WSB consumer expert Clark Howard think?
The funny thing is nobody's going to be happy, which means this is probably a decent compromise when you make everybody sore. But the idea of this is that people who are most in difficulty with their debt get the most forgiveness, $20,000. Others get 10, and then many others get nothing. And it's based on income and what kind of family you grew up in, how poor or affluent your family was as someone who went into school. The big problem here is the bigger picture. We have $1.6 trillion in student loan debt in the United States. That's a number so large, it's hard to really grasp. But when you compare it to other types of loans except mortgages, it's pretty much the largest type of debt that we have in the United States. So if you think about the logical conclusion, and a lot of young people now coming out of high school are thinking this way, they don't want to get in this debt to start with. And so there are more and more ways to get an education without going into serious debt, and that's what we should be about. And I have certain triggers that I like for people to think about. Number one, if you're going into education after high school, never take on more debt for that education than what you're likely to earn the first year on a job. If you use that as a ceiling on borrowing, you'll be much healthier after your education financially than you would be if you say, well, I'll just pay for it over time. So if you cap it at first year's anticipated earnings, it's going to be a manageable amount of debt. Second thing is today, it's so easy to go to community college or a local state school for your first 2 years and hold down tuition costs to such a degree you likely aren't going to need to borrow any significant amount of money at all. And nobody ever asked everywhere you attended. They're really only interested where you graduated from. So you spend your junior and senior year potentially at a place that is more expensive, but because you save so much money your freshman and sophomore year, you're not going to end up with an enormous amount of debt. But the biggest thing going on right now is because of the labor shortages in the United States, employers of all types may have a program available where they pay for your college education or training at a state-supported technical school while you're working. So you get work experience at the same time as you're getting education, and you're not taking on any debt because the employer is paying for your school. And a lot of the people that are doing this for part-time workers. Starbucks was one of the pioneers in this. Target does it. Any of a number of employers, including one you wouldn't expect, Walmart, has a tuition program. So you don't necessarily have to even write your own check for tuition in the first place or borrow for it at the initial cost, because your employer may absorb that cost for you.
Thank you, Clark. Side note from Jamie Dupree in his Washington Newsletter Regular Order notes the legal authority for President Biden to forgive student loan debt. The president used the HEROES Act of 2003. That provides broad authority to grant relief from student loan requirements during specific periods. In this case, it would be the COVID pandemic, which is an official national emergency. Legal opinions are flying around like confetti, so we'll wait to see if there are any court challenges to the president's plan. By the way, the HEROES Act of 2003 was originally meant to mitigate the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks on America. In our WSB follow file today, police, fire, and sheriff's departments all over Metro Atlanta, most if not all, are in great need to add numbers to their ranks, and the competition to do it is fierce. WSB's Edgar Trey gets in depth about what might be the most challenging public safety hiring environment in years.
In 2011, he was a lieutenant with Alpharetta's police force. John Robinson oversaw the recruiting process then.
We would have maybe four openings, and we would have 150, 200 people, and that's not an exaggeration, show up on a Saturday, test, and compete for four openings.
This is now.
Now we test every week. You know, we have a handful of candidates most times that will come out, sometimes not hardly any.
Robinson, now the city's director of public safety. Times have absolutely changed the public safety business. The help wanted sign is out everywhere.
Everybody, I think, is struggling right now to fill vacancies.
We have to be as innovative and creative as possible.
It's become a little bit of an arms race in that we're all kind of fishing from the same pond locally.
For the same candidates, the pay, you bet. Paulding County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Ashley Henson says they have 60-plus jobs to fill.
There are more lucrative jobs that are out there. Someone that might have a heart for public safety may not be inclined to take that leap and when they know they're going to make less money.
Starting deputies in Paulding being offered $47,000 plus in benefits. Alpharetta's pay range is better, but competition with Roswell, who Robinson says wants to be the highest paying in the state.
Our city council has always been very good about keeping an eye on the market. I'm sure at some point we'll look at adjusting again, and so will the others.
In DeKalb County, first responders now to get a fresh 6.5% pay increase on top of a similar one earlier this year.
It's a step in the right direction. However, it's a long way from the mark.
To compete, says Jeff Wiggs, president of DeKalb's Fraternal Order of Police. He wants to see a 20% pay hike of the 6.5%, County CEO Michael Thurman.
It's not enough. That's why we're going to continue to invest going forward.
DeKalb is down 150 positions with police, more than 100 in the fire ranks. Pay aside other factors.
I've had officers leave, go make more money and work from home and be with their family, and I don't blame them. I'm a family guy too, and I certainly understand that.
And he says there is this growing factor departments have to push back against.
A lot of places, they're looking and going, all right, there's a lot of people that don't like the police, and a lot of anti-police rhetoric. Why would I put myself in a profession like that?
But the hiring push is full speed ahead on the airwaves.
And you belong with us, the Henry County Sheriff's Office.
To on the road in person.
And we're going to job fairs at high schools. We're going to job fairs out in the metro area.
Fulton County Sheriff's Office earlier this year showed up at a local gym. Alpharetta's Robinson says the reach to hire is national. They went to New Jersey last month to find officers.
We literally loaded a trailer with our obstacle course, took it up there, and we did the PT test for 2 days, the interviews.
How'd it turn out?
We've already hired a handful, and we've got several more in the process. It was something outside the box. We thought we'd try it, and so far, it's paying off.
Big picture, it's about where you live.
We try to focus on motivating people that want to come and work in their community.
Edgar Tragetts, 95.5 WSB.
This is Atlanta's Morning News Sunday Edition. I'm Scott Slade. Well, anybody around during the space race of the 1960s and early 70s can relate. Going to the moon is a big deal. But I didn't get excited about tomorrow's launch from Cape Canaveral until I heard Mark Strassman's piece on CBS News.
Now, there are no astronauts aboard this mission, but the lead flight director and his team know this mission really has to go well, just has to go well, for astronauts to land on the moon anytime soon.
This is all brand new to us. Everything.
Rick LaBrode works every day to give America the moon. Now 60, he's the Artemis 1 lead flight director, the guy in the hot seat guiding NASA's most ambitious lunar mission in a half century.
We got to have a successful flight before we put the astronauts on the next mission. Otherwise, you're not putting astronauts on the next mission.
You can practice all you want to go to the moon, but the launch is game time.
It's going to be very different. And, you hear the pucker factor. It'll be there.
We met LaBrode inside Artemis Mission Control at the Johnson Space Center. In nearly four decades with NASA, he's helped assemble the International Space Station and served as flight director for the Space Shuttle program.
Analysis has cleared us for four Ohms burns.
But no one working on Artemis 1, not LaBrode, not anyone on his team, has ever worked on a moonshot.
I mean, we were alive, a lot of us, last time we put boots on the moon, but we were very young.
Apollo 17, December 1972. Astronaut Gene Cernan's boot prints were the last left in lunar dust. Budget issues and fading public interest put an end to the Apollo moon missions and closed the book on one of mankind's great achievements until now.
Where do you start? You just dust off the old Apollo manuals?
You know, a lot of our guys did.
LeBro took us up one floor to the stage of so much space history, the iconic Apollo Mission Control Room.
It's just amazing to see the technology and what we were able to do with it.
In here, the United States beat the Soviets to the moon using rotary dial phones and slide rules.
When you look at old footage of the Apollo era, what jumps out at you?
Bermuda. Bermuda's green.
Well, it's always interesting to see people smoking in mission control. You know, we haven't done, we don't do that anymore.
Banana Reef, Houston Network, Net 1.
But, you know, there's a lot of similarities. It's a laser focus. The flight control team, they will do whatever it takes to get it done. That part hasn't changed even the slightest bit.
Launching on top of the most powerful rocket NASA's ever built, Artemis 1 will send a capsule called Orion on a trajectory to the moon. Orion will fly within 60 miles of the lunar surface, then push 40,000 miles beyond the moon for space high drama. Its glimpse back on Earth. After orbiting the moon, Orion will re-enter Earth's atmosphere for the mission's Priority 1 test, whether the capsule's heat shield can withstand temperatures of 5,000 degrees, about half as hot as the surface of the sun.
I mean, it's coming back at some ridiculous speeds. I think it's 11.6 kilometers per second.
25,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah, it gets really, really hot. We got to make sure that's going to support the reentry.
If Artemis 1 succeeds, it would pave the way for human flights to the moon, including a lunar landing later this decade.
And how hurtful to the program would it be if it doesn't go right?
I can't tell you that. I don't know. But it conceivably, it could end the program. It could. You just never know until you get in that situation. I hope we don't have to worry about that. It's my goal.
No pressure, right? From this room, LeBrode and his team will both lead and follow the future of NASA's human space exploration, starting with Artemis 1's liftoff.
And after almost 40 years of NASA, what's that moment going to be like for you?
Oh, my gosh. I can't even begin to think about it, to be honest with you. I've gotten emotional in my old age, so I got to be careful here. It'll be very rewarding. It'll be very special, for sure.
You said emotional. Why emotional?
It reflects back on how blessed I am to even be in this position to be able to do this. Yeah, it's a pretty big deal.
Big moment for him and for the entire team. I asked LeBrode whether he has if he has even more respect now for the Apollo era engineers now that he's directing a launch to the moon himself for the first time. And he said, you know, absolutely, for a couple of reasons. One is, remember, the Apollo era folks were making it up as they went along. It had never been done before. And then also remember just the level of 1960s technology. It really was remarkable that they pulled it off as quickly as they did and as well as they did back in the 60s.
That launch window opens at 8:33 tomorrow morning. We'll cover it live. We'll be right back. This is Atlanta's Morning News Sunday Edition. I'm Scott Slade.
The memorial for former Georgia First Lady Sandra Deal was held in Gainesville yesterday. As WSB Sandra Parrish reports, she was more than just a first lady to the state of Georgia. She was a champion of literacy for Georgia children.
When she became the wife of a sitting governor, Sandra Deal wasn't going to be content just sitting around the governor's mansion.
I just said, I've got to have something to do that can make a difference.
In 2019, just before Governor Nathan Deal left office, she sat down with Reg Griffin and Commissioner Amy Jacobs with the Department of Early Care and Learning and explained why she had a heart to foster the love of reading in children.
I was invited to read in a couple of schools, and I just enjoyed it so much, reading to the little ones. Now, I was a sixth grade school teacher, but they would just get so wrapped into the story that I felt like I was really engaging them and getting them interested in the necessity for them to do the work.
She made it a mission to read to 1,000 schools during the 2 terms her husband served as governor, and she did, hitting all 159 counties and all 180 school districts, some more than once.
You know, I would ask them what they wanted to be when they grew up, and one boy said, I want to be a garbage man and ride on the back of that big old truck. And I said, well, you know, we're going to need good garbage people, because they would have our neighborhood smelling bad if they didn't work and pick up the garbage. And so they're very important. But you need to be able to read and do math, because you're going to need to send bills to those people. But you also have to know where to go to pick up their garbage.
Mrs. Deal, who graduated from Georgia College and State University, was surprised in 2017 by her alma mater when a new institute dedicated to professional development for teachers was named in her honor, the Sandra Dunnigan Deal Center for Early Language and Literacy.
It never occurred to me that they would name something like that for me, but I was pleased and honored that they did, mainly because both my mother and Nathan's mother were early education teachers. And so the Dunnigan Deal named both of them.
Sandra Deal was 80 when she passed away. Sandra Parrish, 95.5 WSB.
Thank you, Sandra. Coming up next, reaction to President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan in Georgia and some bottom line differences between candidates for governor. We'll talk Georgia politics in just a moment. Morning News Sunday edition continues. It's time to talk Georgia politics. And joining us is Atlanta Journal-Constitution political reporter Greg Bluestein. Follow us Politically Georgia podcast on AJC.com. And be sure and grab Greg's book, Flipped, How Georgia Turned Purple. Hey, buddy, it's good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, too.
Let's begin with reaction to President Biden's student loan forgiveness program. Reaction in Georgia. Is it falling along fairly predictable partisan lines here in Georgia, Greg?
Yeah, for the most part. Look, this was one of Senator Warnock's biggest policy priorities. He made it very clear on the campaign trail that he personally lobbied President Joe Biden, not just for student debt relief, but for what he calls meaningful student debt relief. So to him, this was a step, but it was just a first step. He wants more. You know, he always says that he went on a full faith scholarship to Morehouse, which meant that he literally got to Morehouse without knowing how he'd pay even his first semester tuition. So this is very important to him. So he's among the Democrats who say more should there should be more student debt relief. Others say this is perfect, and other Democrats say they have concerns about any student debt relief. You know, there is a deep debate within the Democratic Party about whether this is a sound policy. Republicans had a more predictable reaction. Most of them came out very strongly against this plan, saying it redistributes wealth. It will end up raising taxpayer dollars in the end run. It will end up adding to the deficit. And as Herschel Walker said, what of the families that dipped into their savings account to pay off their debt? What of the people who got jobs to pay off their college debt? And I think that resonates with a lot of Georgians who did that, who paid off their college debt and now, maybe you're saying, why did I bother?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the bottom line, though, is that the Biden administration is not going to reel this back in. I mean, it's a done deal, right?
It's a done deal. The question is, next year, the year after that, will there be more? Will there be even more student debt relief? Because there are a number of Democrats who are saying this is great, but they're continuing to pressure the White House to do even more.
Yeah, and party line by that, I mean, as well, you're hearing from both sides of the aisle here in Georgia, pretty much Republicans are playing it down and Democrats are playing it up.
Yes, I was on a campaign trail with Stacey Abrams down in Camilla, Georgia, southwest Georgia, and it was one of the first things she mentioned. She mentioned that, hey, Joe Biden, with Democrat support, approved the student debt relief, and that she tied it directly to her plan to legalize casino gambling and sports betting to fund a needs-based scholarship for higher education to, again, expand the pool of higher education students and give new opportunities to people who didn't have them. So she's using this as a campaign trail, kind of a wedge to contrast her from Governor Kemp.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Greg. With 72 days, more or less, till the general election, what stands out to you if you contrast the two major candidates for governor between Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp? What's the big differentiation?
Well, it's just about everything, right? You start with abortion, whereas Governor Kemp signed into law one of the nation's tougher anti-abortion restrictions, and Stacey Abrams says that she would preserve abortion access. Guns, Governor Kemp signed into law permissive gun laws. Stacey Abrams said she'd roll back those gun expansions. Money, Stacey Abrams would dip into the state's record surplus of more than $5 billion for what she calls generational changes, funding generational changes, including pay raises for teachers and certain law enforcement officers. Governor Kemp says, hey, we have to give this money back. So he's talking about refunds, tax refunds, homeowners rebates, to give that money back rather than do something that he thinks this generational change talk will only end up costing Georgia taxpayers in the long run. And that's just a glimpse. I mean, we could talk about health care, where Governor Kemp supports a limited Medicaid expansion that was just upheld by the courts, essentially saying that people who want to, who are eligible for Medicaid expansion should meet some sort of work or academic requirement. So it shows that they're working. Where Stacey Abrams is among the many Democrats who say that Georgia should do a full-scale Medicaid expansion with no such requirements. So, you know, there is a very sharp contrast between the two on just about every major policy issue.
Okay. As far as people making up their minds, though, the latest AJC polling didn't have that many undecided voters. Is that number pretty much holding, and when will we see some new numbers?
Yeah, we'll do more polling after Labor Day, which is the traditional sprint to the finish. So more voters will be tuning in. Although I have to say, it felt like it hasn't slowed down one bit since the January 2021 runoffs. But you're right. There's very few undecided voters. There's a vanishingly small number in the governor's race because these two candidates are so well known. Right. And everyone in Georgia has either heard of Governor Kemp or Stacey Abrams, especially those of us who have lived through the 2018 campaign. So they're very well known. They're out there in the media all the time. There's negative ads and positive ads and all that. So they're not really fighting for the sliver of undecided voters. They're fighting for their bases to come back out for them, because Stacey Abrams feels like if she can expand her base and get more voters who usually don't vote in these midterm elections, she can kind of pull off an upset victory. Where Governor Kemp, you know, if he can put together the same coalition that he put together in 2018 and just boost it, right, and just energize some of those voters, and polls show that he's doing that, right? Mm-hmm. Polls show that Republican voters are almost uniformly behind him, and that's a big deal for someone who was opposed by Donald Trump in the primary.
There also will not be any name recognition problems between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker in the campaign for U.S. Senate. And you've been on the trail with both these candidates. What are you seeing in the way of enthusiasm, crowd size, that sort of thing? Is either or both campaigns catching fire?
Yeah, you know, both of them, you're right. Both of them have tens of millions of dollars of spending behind them. And so it's not like Herschel Walker is lacking in name recognition in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And Senator Warnock was in the middle of that 2020-2021 runoff campaign that ended up costing $1 billion. So he's got tremendous name ID as well. There's slightly more undecided voters in that contest, but still not a big number. But in terms of enthusiasm, I mean, I'll go out with Senator Warnock in Warner Robins, and there'll be 300-400 people on a weekday afternoon. Herschel Walker draws huge crowds wherever he goes. So people are really interested in hearing their visions, their messages. Right now, in the polls at least, we're still seeing a split ticket trend, which is basically showing that a significant number of Governor Kemp backers, Republicans who are backing Governor Kemp, are still unsure about Herschel Walker. Some of them are voting or indicating they're voting for Warnock. Some of them are indicating they're voting for the Libertarian, and some of them are still undecided. And that's going to be the big question mark in this race.
Greg, you mentioned the final sprint after Labor Day. What are you looking for? And as if we can't even get away from a commercial break without a political ad these days, are there more coming?
Yes, Scott, more than $270 million has already been spent or reserved on these marquee races for governor and Senate in Georgia. Is it more than $250 million? And yeah, well, we won't reach the heights that we reached in the runoff when almost $1 billion was spent. Thank goodness we won't reach those heights, I think, for our viewers and listeners. But at the same time, we're going to set all sorts of new midterm spending records in Georgia. So the ads and the other ways that candidates are reaching you aren't going away anytime soon. But in this final sprint, I expect Republicans to sharpen even more their messaging around the economy. They feel like that's their ticket to winning. Governor Kemp will blame Stacey Abrams and Joe Biden for inflation. Herschel Walker will blame Senator Warnock for what he calls reckless and uncontrolled spending in Washington. So you're going to hear them talk more and more about the economy. Meanwhile, Democrats, they want to sharpen focus on anti-abortion laws. They want to try to energize women, especially women, but voters in general, who are upset with the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, and who are upset with Georgia's anti-abortion restrictions. So you're going to see even more efforts from Democrats to sharpen our views and sharpen our attention on abortion.
That's foundational. Greg Bluestein, thank you very much. We'll look for you in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and online at AJC.com. Have a great week.
You too. Happy Sunday.
I want to go back to WSB State Capitol reporter Sandra Parrish for just a moment. She was there for the hearing this past week with Fulton County Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney on whether Georgia Governor Brian Kemp could be compelled to testify to the grand jury and when he might do that. Do we learn anything at all from the district attorney's lawyers on what they want to ask the governor?
So they didn't really talk about that during the court hearing. It was part of their response to the motion filed by Governor Kemp's attorneys. And so what we have gleaned just from that motion alone is that they are looking at the phone call or any phone calls between former President Trump and Governor Kemp or any of President Trump's associates, any evidence that they may have had that there was election fraud, which is what they were claiming. And it even mentions threats, if you know any threats were made against him or anyone should the election not be overturned.
We'll see what happens next. We'll be right back. This is Atlanta's Morning News Sunday Edition. I'm Scott Slade. Well, a lot of great things can happen in a couple of decades, especially when you're working with an institution as great as the Alliance Theater. Announcing that Susan Booth will be leaving her role as the Alliance Jennings Hertz Artistic Director to become the Artistic Director of Chicago's Goodman Theater. She has served the Alliance for 21 years. Susan, it's been quite a run. What stands out to you in these 21 years?
Atlanta has been such an amazing partner to the theater, to the Arts Center, to our larger arts community in my time here. I think about specifically for the Alliance, the year and a half when we were building our new theater, we made the decision to travel around the city to lots of different venues and do our season that way. Mm-hmm. And people showed up. People showed up who were longtime Alliance supporters, but also people showed up in all those different neighborhoods to support us. And I will never forget that. I found that just massively moving.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on how you were able to keep the theater going, especially during the challenges of COVID.
We made a decision early on, and I have to pause while a siren goes by my window. I have to thank our board of directors. They made a really brave choice to endorse a decision to keep our staff whole. Rather than laying everybody off and shrinking down to a fraction of our normal size, we decided we'd do the opposite thing, which is to figure out how we could be even more essential than at any other time. So our costume shop started making masks and gowns for healthcare providers. Our scene shop started working on a production a couple of years in advance so that we could get a jump on our return. Our education department just went into massive overtime creating digital content for educators and parents who were now educating their kids from home. So we actually did better in some ways in terms of that mission of being of service to Atlanta during COVID. And it was never an easy time. And it was also a time that I thought this was a theater doing its best work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the brilliance of being able to put together a production, was it of a Christmas Carol in shipping containers?
Yeah, we did drive-in Christmas Carol. So the audience was kept safe in the pod of their car.
Yeah.
The actors were in shipping containers on live feed film. And I'll tell you, I love our annual big gonzo production of Christmas Carol, but man, that drive-in version may go on my list of favorite productions at the Alliance Theater.
I'm so glad you think so, because it was just brilliant the way you guys pulled it off. Well, you're not going to exactly fade away. You're going out with a bang, co-directing everybody. Tell us about the play.
Everybody is written by Brandon Jacob Jenkins. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in drama, and it's based on an ancient play, a 15th century play called Everyman, which is a play about mortality, which just sounds like a total buzzkill. But in fact, this is an incredibly funny play about how you live your life and how you would speak up for yourself at its close. And it asks enormous questions, but it does it in this gleeful, irreverent way. And it is a celebration of some of the best actors in this city. There are five actors who every night at the beginning of this show, in front of you, will draw from a lottery, and that lottery will decide what roles they play for the rest of the evening.
Wow.
And it's not rigged. It's really happening in front of you. There are 120 variations on how this play can roll out according to that lottery, and it's live on stage in front of you.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see it. Well, what's next for you? Tell us about Chicago.
So I head to Chicago end of September, and I am returning to the Goodman Theater, which is a full circle event for me. That was where I was working when I was offered the opportunity to come be the artistic director at the Alliance. So to return there as artistic director just has a kind of symmetry to it that I couldn't say no to.
Well, I know a national search is underway for your successor. What advice would you give him or her?
I think when the Alliance shows up in partnership, we're at our best. It's not about making art for art's sake. It's about making art that occasions conversations that the city wants and needs to have. It's about figuring out where our community is at any given time and how we could step into that moment and advance everybody's outcome. So it's about causing good things to happen. If that's your mission as a leader, you'll thrive here.
Well, you certainly lived up to that, the beloved Alliance Theater and its beloved longtime artistic director, Susan Booth. It is so good to talk to you. Godspeed. Thank you.
You as well. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning on 95.5 WSB.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.